Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. With the academic year almost starting, New Hampshire teachers face a back-to-school season like no other. Many are nervous, some are excited, and all face huge unknowns, whether their district is going all in-person, all remote, or a combination hybrid model. This hour, we talk with New Hampshire teachers and Exchange listeners. We welcome your questions, especially if you're a teacher. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests. They are Jen Given, a social studies teacher at Hollis Brookline High School, which is doing in-person learning, and Abe Ewing, a woodworking and manufacturing teacher at Conval Regional High School. His district is adopting a hybrid approach. Also, Lindsay Cole, a biology teacher at Kennett High School in North Conway. Kennett is planning in-person instruction. And Sue Hannon, she teaches reading and math at Hillside Middle School in Manchester, which is mostly remote this fall. Welcome to everybody. I know this is a very busy time of year for you, so I really appreciate it. Jen, I want to start with you. As I said, your district is returning to all in-person instruction. How do you feel about that?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. We are nervous. We're nervous about the science. We're nervous about what instruction looks like. We're nervous about the fact that it's kind of a tenuous at best plan, and that doesn't matter what model you're in, because there's so many moving parts that we're worried that we plan for one thing and something else happens and we have to pivot. I think anxiety is sort of the prevailing theme of our staff right now.
Lindsay, how about you? North Conway is also doing in-person. What's going through your mind right now as this year approaches?
Yes, good morning. We are a little bit in the same boat as far as being pretty anxious about how the school year is going to start. But I will say, from the standpoint, our district has done an amazing job at working to set a plan that will allow us to make shifts smoothly if the need arises. So if we have to go to a full remote, the way that we changed our schedule at the high school will allow us to easily shift into remote without making any massive stress changes to the students, which is something we definitely had to take away from this spring as far as changes that were made. So we looked to that, used that to help improve the possibility of if we had to go to full remote.
So hoping for the best, but planning for the worst. Abe, how about you? As I said, Conval is adopting a hybrid approach. What does that mean for you, Abe, as a teacher whose subject is hands-on? And how are you feeling about all this?
I'm excited. I think at Conval, they put together a really good plan. And I'm not hiding the fact that I'm kind of proud of our district. For me as a woodshop teacher, it means that essentially all my classes have been cut in half, and I'll have a group of students for a week, and then the following week, the other group of students. So a lot of times my classes are 16 kids. That means the first week I'll have about 8, and the following week, the other 8. And then the kids that are at home, they need to also log in, and I need to teach them synchronously. So I will be taking roll call for the kids at home, and they're part of the lesson. I think it's awesome and allows autonomy for all the stakeholders, which is really cool.
Well, a little bit later in the show, Abe, I'll ask you how you teach woodworking and manufacturing remotely to the kids that are sort of off that week. But Sue, Manchester, different story. You're going almost all remote. There are exceptions for the youngest children, which we can talk about. But overall remote in your district. Sue, how do you feel about this?
Good morning, first of all. I think we're very happy with the fact that so many people are going to be remote. However, we're certainly not happy with the fact that it's not everybody. Manchester, you know, being the city that it is and being the hotbed of COVID cases, makes it a very different place to have to look at as far as how are we going to educate our students. And so we really need to look at the probabilities that are much higher in Manchester than anywhere else. We conducted a survey of our educators, and there were overwhelming numbers of people who have tremendous anxiety about returning to school in person. Even though we all understand that, you know, our youngest learners, these are children who are learning to be students and are learning pre-reading and reading skills. And this is, of course, extremely important in that time frame. But at the same time, you know, the science, as you talked about in some of your previous shows, does not show a whole lot of difference for bringing COVID to school, even with our youngest children. So we're still working on our plan, because it is a very broad stroke plan right now. It is not complete. And right now what we're waiting for is parents to respond to tell us how many students are actually going to choose to be remote all year long, especially with our little ones.
So just to clarify for the audience, Sue, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. Preschool, kindergarten, and first grade are going into the building in Manchester. The littlest kids, everybody else, 2 through 12, staying home. Is that right?
That is correct. But our little ones are not going to be there every day. So they will have a cohort model of the Monday, Tuesday, and remote on Thursday, Friday, and then Wednesdays will be kind of a catch-all day of what do we need to do to intervene with students? What do we need to do to catch them up, give them special projects, those types of things. So they will really only be in school, the students will, 2 days a week, but the educators will be in school 4 days a week.
Wow, okay. So all of you, and Jen, you first, what's the wider conversation been like in your community, in Hollis Brookline, about this? You know, teachers, parents, school board members, and so forth. You know, you've had your own conversations, obviously, with teachers, and I should say you're the president of your local teachers association. But how about the wider community, Jen? What's that felt like for you?
Divisive. We have a range of views from you know, coronavirus is a conspiracy theory, all the way to everyone is not taking this seriously enough, and we need to go back into statewide lockdown, right? So all of those views are percolating in a relatively small community, and it makes it really difficult to have productive discussions when people aren't, I mean, and obviously those are the extremes, but there are a lot of folks who are not listening to each other. And teachers are feeling caught in the middle of that and not always supported. We've been tasked to solve the pandemic. and I don't know about my colleagues on the call, but I'm not a trained virologist, epidemiologist, mental health crisis counselor, referee, you know, I'm none of those things. I am a world history teacher, and I enjoy that, and I love my job. But schools have been asked to fix the unfixable, and we've been tasked to do it with the budgets that we needed to write a year and a half ago. So that's the other piece, is that so much of the resource management is also really challenging. So we have these discussions in our community that are divisive on the science, divisive on the budget, divisive on the role of schools. So, you know, it's really difficult to find a plan that meets all of those diverse needs.
Wow, that's really profound, Jen. Teachers are really being put in the middle of this discussion and are being asked to kind of fix it, to figure it out. And you're not an epidemiologist, you're not a virologist. So that sounds very stressful, Jen.
It is. And, you know, we are also balancing the needs of staff who are parents, who maybe attend schools in some of the other folks' districts who have hybrid or remote models. We're going back 5 days. So now we have staff who are thinking, well, how do I care for my own children while apparently going back to work? And then we have high-risk staff who have immunocompromised, or their spouses are significantly ill, and they're facing choices between, do I go back to work or do I lose my income and my health insurance? And all of that is happening while we're being accused of, not being willing to go back to work. And so I think teachers are feeling justifiably put upon.
Wow. Well, when we talk about families and how they're doing, I want to let everybody know that Tuesday night on our special summer virtual event series, The Exchange Live from Home, we'll be checking in with families and how they're thinking about all this back to school stuff, the academic year, what their plans are for the fall after this pandemic summer. So that is going to be Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and people can register for that event. Also, we will replay that event on Thursday morning. So we'll be definitely looking at that family angle of it. But Lindsay, how about you in North Conway? How much did you feel like teachers were part of the conversation, part of this incredibly difficult decision?
We were certainly in the discussion early, or I should say, into the end of last year. We were able to have small discussions with administration to discuss how remote learning went, how we felt about it, thoughts that were coming into how we might improve the situation if we had no idea what was going to happen come the fall. So our feedback was, we had the opportunity to address that. The reentry committee up here was made up of about 50 people, all of different stakeholders, from our pediatricians to school board members to parents to some teachers, although I think we could have had a little bit more involvement on that end. But so there was a lot and a huge amount of discussion of all the different angles, similar to the fact that we have, a fairly wide range of ideas. For the most part, we've come up with something that can at least get, in hopes to get people in a place where they're feeling comfortable given the situation. So if a parent or a family has a situation where they don't feel comfortable sending their kid back to school, there is a distance learning option. And so we're going to work across the district, let's say at the elementary level. If, there's a couple of students at one school and a couple of students at another that don't feel comfortable about going back, they'll be put together in a cohort for distance learning. One of those teachers for that potentially could be from Bartlett, from one of the schools in North Conway, but they will work with that teacher, and that will be their teacher for the semester. Same thing. Similarly, at the high school, in the efforts to not make it too crazy on us, if families decide to do distance learning rather than send into school, they'll be put into their own section. So I potentially could be teaching while I'm at school a remote biology class and have another class of face-to-face. So that way I don't have one class where 10 of my students are in school while 5 of them are trying to learn remotely in the same class. So those are trying, at least the efforts are there to make it hopefully run as smoothly as we can make it run.
Fingers crossed. And I got a Facebook comment from Barbara who says, in our district, SAU 67, Bo Dunbarton, there is a lot of concern about teachers, Barbara says, who aren't feeling heard during this decision-making process. Barbara says the community hasn't even been told if our teachers will be provided with PPE through the school or if they have to provide their own. Barbara says, how does teacher safety factor into in-person return? Without our teachers, our schools aren't much more than buildings. What do you think, Abe? How much did you feel heard, and how good is the safety plan?
So by the end of last spring, I was completely burnt out. I think that's kind of important. It will at least frame my next comment. So by the time summer hit, I enjoyed the greatest perk of teaching, which is summer. Sometimes I needed that break. So as far as me being heard, I don't think I was trying to be heard. I took time to recover from last spring. Going into school, I feel like teachers have been heard. We've been represented in our SAU, and masks are going to be worn, things disinfected, 6 feet of distance. They've checked classroom space to make sure all the classrooms can accommodate the students. And they're literally putting up tents to create more space and more usable space. So I think it's been, at the forefront of the conversation is how are we going to keep teachers and students safe when they come back in person? So I'm very confident. But, and I don't feel heard. I feel heard because I didn't try to be part of the conversation. I was recovering, and then when I came back, I saw this plan put together, and I'm like, holy cow, this is crazy. So I feel like it's great.
Crazy in a way that you like it, Abe.
Yes, crazy in a way that I was surprised, all the things we've heard across the country and New Hampshire locally, and having a very diverse district ourselves where people believe everything. I was shocked at how the plan kind of accommodates everybody.
Well, sorry to interrupt you, Abe, there. Let's go to our listeners, because Susan's calling in from Dover. And Susan, good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'm a high school teacher. I think it's been a very disappointing process as far as teachers are concerned with the return to, in my case, full in-time learning. I think asking high school students in particular to social distance is like asking them to go to the beach but don't get any sand on you. I feel very concerned, not only for my own health, but for the health of my colleagues. And I also want to put out there that in the spring, my colleagues and myself worked so hard to make this experience a good one for online learning and for students. We went above and beyond. And to put us back in a situation where we're being asked to minimize our social distancing, to put us back in really precarious situations, I am deeply concerned with, and I understand how how people want their children back in school. However, I think one thing that is being really overlooked is that we are in a pandemic. And we forget to say that. We'd like not to be, but that is the truth. And I will end here. We are in a pandemic.
Susan, can I ask you, you're in Dover, so what is your district's plan?
I teach in Rochester. We are planning on going back full in person. And so that is the plan as of now, that all students will return with a remote option. But I think more is being discussed now, and I certainly wish that teachers had been more involved in the process.
Yeah, you don't sound very happy about the plan, Susan.
I'm deeply concerned.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling in, and good luck as this year unfolds. Sue, I'm curious, Manchester, as I said, is going mostly remote. We talked about the youngest kids going in part-time. What was the reaction from the broader Manchester community about this, Sue?
I think, as Jen said earlier, it's been a very mixed reaction. We have many parents and community members who are very supportive of the plan, supportive of education in general, and we've included a lot of community partners in the work that we've been doing all summer long to try to develop our process of how we're going to return to school. We do have, though, the small but loud crowd who puts out an awful lot on things like social media and so on to really disparage educators. In particular, and I'm not quite sure why, because we're not the ones who make the decision. We're the ones who have to live with the decision and, are basically being told, you get to go in and put your life on the line every day for someone else's children. So it's kind of a tough thing, but you know, we've had a very mixed reaction in Manchester. From what I've heard, we've had probably a lot more people supportive of educators and supportive of the remote education, keeping people home because it's really the safest thing to do. If we can do something that guarantees safety of students against COVID, then we should probably do that. We can't always guarantee safety every single day. Somebody's going to trip on a shoelace and fall down and hurt themselves. Somebody is going to, you know, have an asthma attack. Somebody is going to, you know, get upset for whatever reason and get hurt. We can't avoid those kinds of things, but this is something we really can avoid. And I think there's an awful lot of the public who understands that point and says, you know what, you know, these are our children. And saying, oh, the probability of a child catching this or having a serious effect from it is low. I'm sorry, but you're not taking that chance on my child. And it's not up to any district, as far as we're concerned, to take that chance on any of our lives.
Well, coming up, I've got a bunch more emails, including a couple that talk about the incorporation of outdoor learning. Some teachers saying they're excited about that. I also have an email from a parent who wants to know how remote learning in the fall will be better than it was in the spring. He was not happy with how that happened in his district. And we'll take a lot more of your calls and emails. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Hey, it's Lauren Chulgin, NHPR political reporter, and we are so thankful for our members who make NHPR's news reporting possible. That includes our comprehensive coverage of the coronavirus pandemic. If you're looking for another way to help, you can donate that vehicle you no longer need to us. We'll pick up your car, truck, or RV and invest the funds right back into the programming you rely on every day. Go online to nhpr.org/cardonation to learn more. And thanks so much.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, New Hampshire teachers face an unprecedented and unpredictable academic year given the ongoing pandemic. Let's get your comments into our conversation today, especially if you're a teacher. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our teachers are Jen Given at Hollis Brookline High School, which is doing in-person learning, Abe Ewing from Conval Regional High School, a district which is adopting a hybrid approach, Lindsay Cole at Kennett High School in North Conway with in-person instruction, and Sue Hannon at Hillside Middle School in Manchester, a district that, as Sue explained, is mostly but not completely remote this fall. One more time, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477, our email exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you have got a couple emails on outdoor education. Christina writes, I teach middle school at a nature-based public charter school. We are utilizing our outdoor classroom spaces and the fields and forests around our school for reopening. Unless it is too dangerous to be outside, I will be outside in the forest with my class every day. Christina says, I've been a nature-based educator for years. Our school has valued the natural environment as a critical part of teaching and learning. Christina says, I like this part. Some think outdoor learning might just turn into one big recess, but she says, if you work together with students to establish routines, it really does work just as well as indoors, if not better. So that's Christina. And then Lynn says, yesterday we were in a New London restaurant with a huge outdoor tent and vertical heaters to turn on if needed. One of these enormous tents as for weddings. It made me remember The Exchange when you interviewed a school superintendent and she said they'd bought tents for their school so they can have outdoor learning. Having seen the size of the tent and realizing the spaciousness, I wish all schools had money for tents and space. Should the federal government include money for better air systems in schools when needed? And also tents for the best health for all. And Lynn, thank you for writing in as well. And Abe, to you first, you mentioned some component of tents and outdoor education in your district, Conval. So what's going on there, Abe?
So it's my understanding they did a survey of the rooms to find out if they had enough space to accommodate the students in that classroom if they remain 6 feet apart. And some classrooms didn't make the cut ventilation wise. So they've moved those classes underneath tents outside. The tents are huge. If you drive by Conval right now, the football field or the practice fields have giant tents on them.
Oh, wow.
They've ran Wi-Fi, and I guess they've been working on getting Wi-Fi out to the tent spaces, and there's outdoor classrooms. It's kind of sweet. It's really cool.
Now, you're not going to be able to really do that, though, right, Abe? Because you're working with machinery and equipment and so forth, right?
Absolutely. So I'm not moving my table saws outside.
Yeah, that would be a bit much. And how about you, Jen? Any aspect of outdoor learning at Hollis Brookline High School?
Yep, we're working on it. We have to, we're navigating all the intricacies of getting tents, making sure our tech can actually extend beyond the walls of the facility that we've already wired for all of those things. We certainly don't have enough resources to put every classroom in a tent outside. And so we're talking about a method of signing those spaces out. Now, that will work wonderfully if you have certain types of lesson plans. As Abe mentioned, it's limited to some practicalities. And one of the big concerns right now is just whether the Wi-Fi will be able to extend out that far. So again, it's we're trying to kind of figure all of this out on the fly.
Yeah, absolutely. How many times have I heard the analogy of building the plane while you're flying it? So I understand. Lindsay, in North Conway, it gets chilly pretty early in the year. How much outdoor education are you guys planning?
We're going to try to use it as much as we can till we can't. I believe is the plan.
Your fingers freeze.
Fingers crossed, for potentially some later cooler weather and snow, but at the same time, we hope to have snow for the season. But as far as getting outside, our admin says, take them out, set your ways up so that you can learn outside with your classroom as much as you can. If we have to be inside, we've arranged things to limit class size to 15 or fewer students. So we're really working to drop student numbers down. Our changes to our schedule have allowed for that. So I think we're going to be able to be okay with maintaining those numbers and keeping things low. So, fingers crossed that we'll be able to take them outside as much as we can. As a biology teacher, that's kind of fun, for sure,
yeah, that
to
works
be outside
for you.
With my students to do what we can do, and then as far as Wi-Fi and everything, I have not heard yet to what extent we're going to be able to make that piece happen. But as far as the allowance for bringing your kids outside, they're saying make it happen, to the best that you can.
Sure. Well, a different question for you, Sue, and this comes from an email from Phil, who says, my biggest frustration has been the response of the Nashua Public School my son attends. Phil says, when the lockdown was first imposed in March, their response was homework by email. There was no structure to the school day, no regular Zoom sessions. Attendance was taken by emailing a question that was to be answered during the day. The normal mechanisms by which teachers reported progress to parents broke down. Phil says all of this chaos was devastating for my son, and he withdrew into a deep depression. The pressure to perform in the unstructured and chaotic environment that was thrust upon him caused damage to his emotional being that far outweighed any educational benefit. And the question, I guess, for you, Sue, is in Manchester, given that you guys are almost all remote, how are you planning, Sue, in your own classrooms to make it better? Because a lot of parents, like Phil, say, this was not very good this spring. I mean, no one's fault. Everybody was, doing it in emergency mode, but it was not great. So what are your thoughts around that, Sue?
Well, I agree with you, Laura. It wasn't great because we were all in emergency mode. It literally was end your day on Friday, March 13th. And then you found out on Sunday night that we were going remote. We were going to have one day on the 16th to get our act together and then start teaching on the 17th. So that threw everybody into a tailspin.
Wow, you had one day, Sue? Sorry for interrupting. Yeah. You had one day?
Yeah, we did.
Well, Concord gave their teachers a week, so okay. Yeah.
We had one day to pull it together. So I can certainly understand what Phil went through and what his son went through, because it was very difficult. It was very difficult to connect with students. We were going through the process at that point, and it took us almost the entire amount of time for the rest of the year to be able to connect with some students, to be able to get them what they needed. They didn't have the information that they needed, or we needed to translate it in order to get them to come get a computer from school if they needed it. We had to have Comcast come in and set up some Wi-Fi for them. So there was this huge rolling mess that was going on during last year, and it was not helpful for students or teachers in that particular kind of situation. This year, I know for Manchester in particular, but I'm sure many other districts are hopping on the bandwagon. We are getting support from Southern New Hampshire University, because SNHU teaches 95% of its students online.
Sure.
So Southern New Hampshire University is going to be coming in and working with the Manchester School District to give us what it takes to do online teaching and online learning as opposed to emergency teaching and learning. So this will change the factor dramatically on how we are educating our students, but also how we're connecting with our students and what we need to do to connect with them properly. Yeah. And make sure that things like social emotional learning and all those parts and pieces that have to go with education are addressed as well.
Well, and Abe, to you, with Conval's hybrid model, how will kids, your students or the students of colleagues of yours, how will they be taught on the remote days? And also in every school, there are going to be kids who have to stay home, whose family situations dictate that they really can't go to school. So what's the plan in Conval for delivering education remotely, at least part of the time?
So our plan does have, it's essentially broken into four models, where the green model is partially online, partially at home, or in person and at home. And we're ready to move to completely online or completely in person, depending on how things go. If we have an outbreak or something starts to happen in our district, we can move online immediately. So for me, as a wood shop teacher, that means the first day of class, I need to be working on my online class as well, setting up norms and things so that if we do shift completely online, all my kids are ready right off the bat. Which last year, as Sue said, you leave on Friday, come in on Monday, and it's a different world. So we're preparing for that the first day of class.
I know one of the issues in the spring, Abe, and I'm curious what you think, was with the teachers like you who do hands-on learning. Concord here has CRTC, the Concord Regional Technical Center, where again, there's dental hygiene, there's cosmetology, there's auto mechanics. And that seems to be one of the questions that keeps coming up a lot is, some education can be done okay remotely, but how are you going to teach hands-on, wood shop, manufacturing, Abe, in that remote mode?
So for me, we at Conval, we also have a career tech ed center, and I teach manufacturing and wood shop. For the first week, if I'm teaching kids how to use a table saw, the kids at home will be watching my voiced over video of how to use a table saw, and then hopefully taking the quiz while the kids in class are working on how to actually build those skills. So for the hybrid model, I can use it to my advantage a little bit, where the kids can be doing some of their test taking at home on their Chromebooks, while in person, they're using the skills they're learning. So it really cuts down my class size and can even help the flow of the classroom a little bit. When we move online, I think my big focus is social emotional learning. Hmm. A lot of, just like Phil said with his child at home, depression, things like that, I think it's really important to focus on the social emotional well-being of our students when we go online. And so for me as a woodshop teacher, in person, I'm good at building relationships and working hands-on. It was hard going online because I felt like the two things I was good at got ripped out from underneath me.
Absolutely.
So trying to find a way to check in on the students, go live as a class is huge. And then as far as the actual content, what they're learning, is I can use online learning as an opportunity to get their OSHA 10 cards. So a lot of times I can do that online anyways. I'm just more of a mentor guiding them through the process. And then also we work more on our CAD skills. So computer aided drafting, there's a lot of web-based drafting programs now. So,
oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's different from when I took woodshop back in seventh grade. So I got a lot of emails here that I'd like to share with all of you and get your thoughts. Steve says, I believe that our discussions about getting back to school focus too much on the direct risks to teachers, parents, and students, which are considerable, of course, Steve says. But I think we need to focus more on the potential for a larger public health crisis due to increased community transmission when relatively large numbers of persons, students, teachers, and staff, begin returning to buildings. Steve says this will mean that everyone in the community will face a greater risk of exposure to COVID-19. And Lisa has a similar comment. Lisa says, I'm an elementary educator in Manchester and have been following the social distancing rules. Now, all of a sudden, it is okay to go into a school building with a bunch of students and staff members. Why is it okay now? Lisa says, there's still a pandemic. I'm very anxious about everything. And I think I'll turn to you, Jen. Again, Hollis Brookline, you're right now planning to do in-person learning, although as we've learned, things can change on a dime. How do you feel about these comments from Steve and Lisa?
Totally agree with all of it. we have been, kind of sitting back wondering why science has taken a backseat to practicality on a lot of these conversations, which is not to say that it always has. We've had very productive discussions with our district, and with the exception of a few, our school boards have been really supportive. But the state and federal government have completely failed us on leading in this matter. Schools are putting together their own plans based on their own views, and it's become this kind of Wild West in the name of local control. And so we don't have the funding or the leadership to just get us a clear path forward. I would totally agree. I'm a mother as well as a teacher. My children will be remote this fall, in part because I am concerned for their safety. Also in part because I want to make sure that there's space in the buildings for other children who maybe don't have the ability to stay home as easily as my two kiddos could. Their dad works at SNHU and is remote. So he is able to kind of monitor them regardless of what our plan becomes.
Wow, that's a great expertise to have in this time. Lucky you, Jen.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, but like anybody's kids, they don't want to listen to us, you know?
Well, that's true. That's true. You
know, like my son is going to be in high school and he doesn't want anything to do with the fact that I happen to have taught high school for 18 years, you know? I obviously don't know what I'm talking about. I share that concern. Our parents are older. We've been talking about, do we not see family if our kids choose to go back in person, right? Like those pieces that are, it's not like we go to a bubble all day and then they go home and then they aren't exposed to anybody else. And then they come back the next day and it's perfectly safe. Like every opportunity of contact is risky.
I would like to ask Abe, Lindsay, and Sue, you two, about your own feelings around family and home and, you don't have to share large personal details, but just how you're going to juggle this in your own life. So we'll talk about that after a short break and take a lot more emails as well. The address is exchange at nhpr.org. Use Facebook if you'd like. That's great. And our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. More with our panel of teachers about back to school this year in just a moment. You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Chances are, you're working from home a lot more these days. Hi, I'm Sam Evans Brown, host of Outside In, and if you're like me, you're driving much less. And perhaps you're wondering what to do with that old vehicle you no longer need. Well, you can donate it to NHPR and turn those many miles into shows that you love, like Morning Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Outside In. We'll take care of the paperwork and arrange to have it picked up for free at nhpr.org/cardonation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, New Hampshire teachers face an academic year like no other, trying to deliver instruction within a stubborn pandemic. Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you this morning. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. We're talking with four teachers. They are Jen Given at Hollis Brookline High School, which is doing in-person learning, Abe Ewing from Conval Regional High School, a district with a hybrid approach, Lindsay Cole at Kennett High School in North Conway with in-person instruction, and Sue Hannon at Hillside Middle School in Manchester, a district that is almost all remote this fall. And all of you, you all teach the older students, and it's been great to hear about that. I also want to bring in another perspective, though. We talked earlier with a teacher who teaches younger students. This is Donna Karawacki. She's a pre-K teacher at Mount St. Mary Academy in Manchester, which is returning to in-person instruction this fall. And we're going to hear Donna talk about her biggest concerns.
I love my children. I love them dearly, so I'll do anything to protect them. But, you know, I worry, to be honest with you, my biggest concern is day one, they come in here. Day three, a child starts sneezing and coughing. What do we do now? Is that child going to be sent home? It can just escalate. And say the child has a fever, and the COVID tests that they promised 24 to 48 hours are actually more like a week. So I must say my biggest concern is this child who seems to be presenting some symptoms is going to be taken home, sent home. Now what happens?
Again, that's Donna Karawacki, pre-K teacher at Mount St. Mary Academy in Manchester. And Lindsay, we talked about this earlier, sort of hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst. What sorts of scenarios are keeping you up at night, Lindsay, like we heard from Donna?
Yes, there's always the concern regarding if a student does show, or a teacher for that matter, begins to show symptoms. We do have some, you know, plans in place as far as, okay, trying to get them sent home, get the contact made about it, get the test done. There's still some unknown as far as will we, you know, how is that going to impact the class that student's in, you know, as far as what's going to happen from there? You know, will we have to quarantine? My husband and I just had that started having that conversation yesterday, in fact, saying, okay, so here's the what if. And, yeah, you know, if I have to quarantine for 2 weeks, how are we going to manage that? And so the conversations are beginning, at least, you know, at home about what to do with that. It is a worry, you know, at this point, you know, my daughter's going into eighth grade. And so the plan right now is that she'll return to school. She's at Kennett Middle and work through there. They're doing a similar shift in how they approach the day as well by taking teams and creating a more static, smaller cohorts of students and to try to limit exchanges during the day. Same thing with what we're doing at the high school too. So we're making all efforts to limit exchanges, even by being in school. It's interesting because even though we're going to be in school really only two classes a day,
I will see face to face. My other two classes that I teach during the day, I will be doing, in essence, remotely. Those students will be somewhere else in the building during that time.
To minimize people wandering the hallways, Lindsay. Is that
exactly.
what you mean?
Exactly. So what we're going to be doing is really only having one transition during the day. So I will see two of my classes will be these intensive hour and a half long classes face-to-face. The other two are going to be 45 minutes remote. They'll stay in whatever classroom they're in, and I will, in essence, teach that remotely, a less intense for 2 weeks. And then at the two-week mark, we'll flip, and those that were the 45-minute will become the face-to-face, while the other one, you know, the other two become remote. So we're going to be in a semester course situation where we'll see students and have four classes for the semester the students would have, and they'll have those every day. At the semester switch, have four new classes for the semester versus
wow.
our eight
lots
class.
Of moving parts.
yeah. So well, where we used to have the eight classes every other day.
So Abe, Jen and Lindsay shared a little bit about, you know, their own families and their own kids. I mean, you know, a lot of teachers are parents as well. How about you, Abe? You don't have to tell us every detail, but how are you working this out on your own family?
So in our family, I have a stepson who's 16. He's going to be a junior this year. And then also a three-year-old.
Oh, wow.
Who's going to preschool. And she thinks she's in charge. So her preschool's her preschools have made accommodations that they've reduced their numbers drastically to help with social distancing. With my 16-year-old, it's been a very interesting conversation. And to go back to Phil earlier and even Susan from Dover, it's hard to keep high school kids apart. I think part of being a high school kid is fighting the system. And so he says, how do they think they're going to get everybody to wear a mask? It's not going to happen. I'm going to buy this kind of mask, everything else. And I said to him, oh, you don't have to wear a mask. He goes, what do you mean? That's the plan. And I said, you can access a quality education at the kitchen table here and not go back to school and, you know, take use of the online version. And his face dropped. He's a hands-on learner. He wants to be in class so bad.
Sure.
That a lot of those things that high schoolers do, are kind of taken off the table. So he's excited for the first time in a while to be back in person, knowing that he has parameters on that.
Well, let's take this email from Judith, who says, ventilation is a major concern. Most school classrooms were not built with acceptable ventilation equipment in order to circulate appropriately. Unless the school district funds this much needed facility requirement, then every person is at risk, as well as their family members. The teaching environment needs to be safe in order for learning to be successful. And Sue, I want to throw this to you. And in doing so, I want to reference our conversation that we had last week with about the science of this. And the analogy I've heard a lot, Sue, is no one factor is going to make schools safe, but the Swiss cheese analogy where, you know, you do ventilation and you do masks and you do social distancing and you do cleaning and you do screening and maybe you do some testing. And then when you put all those layers, which admittedly aren't perfect, on top of each other, you can get something that is reasonably safe. Now, that's the message that we got from our epidemiologist last week. Given that Manchester is all remote, Sue, or mostly remote, how do you feel about that?
Well, the things that have to happen in order for all of those safety factors to come together is pretty phenomenal. Just looking at the heating and ventilation systems alone, that email was correct. You know, we have some buildings that are over 100 years old in Manchester and some ventilation systems that I don't know that any of them are any less than 10 or 15 years old, probably 15 or more. They've all been running with filters that are called MERV 8 or MERV 9 in order to do this appropriately and have people back in school. We need to change our filters to MERV 13, which means it's more tightly woven. It's harder. It puts more pressure on the ventilation system in the first place. And it is extremely costly because we also have to change all of those filters every quarter. Now, for a place like Manchester with 22 school buildings, that's going to cost the school district of Manchester $300,000 a year to change those filters to be that type of filter to filter out things like viruses. So there's, you know, there's a lot of factors that come in here. There's that safety factor that, yeah, it's better, but it's still not 100%. It's not something that's guaranteed like remote learning and staying home. And there's the cost factor, because even though, you know, CARES Act money is going to be a great thing for some school districts, it's not going to be enough for some school districts who just have to bear those types of costs that they are not looking at, you know, when budgets were created in the first place last year.
Sure.
I also think that you know, we need to really look at how we're going to do this, because part of the consideration has to be with the parents looking at, okay, if my child is going to go back to school in an all-in approach or a hybrid approach, and 4 days into school, somebody comes in who tests positive for COVID, if my kid is in that class, now I have to find some way for my kid to be home for 2 weeks when I was planning to have them in school so I could go do my job. And we're going to start going back and forth with in school and out of school. You know, again, just looking at the numbers alone, the risk factor for Manchester would be that on day one, there will probably be about 14 people who come into our school district testing positive, just by the numbers. So what are we going to do? Turn around and send a whole bunch of people home because they were in classrooms. And that would be obviously if we had everybody in school. We are not, so it makes a difference. But Manchester's also having in school our self-contained students, our high needs EL students, and our CTE students. So, you know, we're still putting people at risk. And, you know, at what cost for parents, at what cost for the district, at what cost for the health and safety of our students and teachers.
Here's an email from Boris, who says, "The teachers worrying about their lives is really pretty exaggerated," Boris says. "They never worry about the flu, and COVID-19 cases are very low in New Hampshire." Boris says, "Actually, the death rate is so low that it's not really a problem." And Jen, you talked about this earlier. How do you respond to that?
I love when people tell me what I am and am not worried about. I do worry about the flu. I get the flu shot every year. I also, as a history teacher, can tell you that the fatality rate of COVID is significantly larger than the annual flu deaths. Annually, we have about 30 or so thousand Americans die of influenza, depending on the strain. I haven't checked today, but we were over 160,000 fatalities in the last few months. So completely disagree with the facts on the premise of that email. That said, even when I am worried about those things, you know, we go to work. Now, the difference here, though, is that teachers are typically provided training on the tasks that we're asked to do. In this case, we are being asked to go into a completely new form of education, completely, you know, reinvent the wheel, as it were. And on top of that, we're supposed to be thankful for the opportunity and willing to risk our lives and our family's health and safety. And this is where I think teachers are really frustrated, because in the past we've been tasked with fixing a lot of society's ills. You know, drug problems in young people, well, we'll put programming in to address that. Mental health and social emotional well-being, we will put programs into that. We will get trained in emergency management, lockdown drills, school shootings, and somehow or another, people just keep thinking that we can handle one more task, and we aren't funded for it, we aren't trained for it, and now you're asking us to risk the lives of our families, and I think people are justifiably fed up. So, I do get the flu shot, though, every year.
Jen, you sound really anxious and almost at the end of your rope there. I feel for you.
I'm advocating for a group of people who are underrepresented, underappreciated, and overworked. And so that tends to make me Yeah, I get frustrated. And we've spent our summer trying to rebuild education, and we're not doing that because we're getting paid. We're doing that because we love our students. We want to invest in our students. We want our students to surpass us. And so we're willing to do all of these things. But there is a limit, and we can't get blood from a stone. So, and I would feel that way about our taxpayers too. Our taxpayers can't continue to front increases when they just don't have any more to give. So, we really need state and federal leadership on these pieces in order to create a system where we can really safely educate kids and do so in the best possible manner.
Abe, what's it like for you to make all these plans that you've described, knowing that it could all go out the window tomorrow?
I'm going to do my best. And when I get really frustrated, I've been trying really hard. It was good advice when I first started. When you get upset or frustrated, take another sip of coffee, take a deep breath. I think Daniel Tiger alludes to that too. You gotta roll with it. No one has control over what's going to happen in the next 4 months. I'm happy our district has tried to think about thoroughly as possible. And seeing other districts, it doesn't look like that's the case everywhere. And if I follow national news, that's definitely not the case.
Yeah, some of the national headlines are quite concerning. All of you, we have run out of time, but the exchange is going to be tracking this issue, has been tracking this issue very closely. So we'll talk to you again. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. And we've been talking this hour with Jen Given, a social studies teacher at Hollis Brookline High School, Abe Ewing, a woodworking and manufacturing teacher at Conval Regional High School, Lindsay Cole, a biology teacher at Kennett High School in North Conway, and Sue Hannon, she teaches reading and math at Hillside Middle School in Manchester. You've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.